Hello, all. So, Raised Sports is a member of the Storyhanger Podcast Network, which is a collection of really cool documentary podcasters all working together to grow their audiences while also telling these amazing stories. One of those shows is called Remains. And let me tell you about it for just a second here. Remains is produced by journalist Janice Cantieri, who, as a National Geographic Fellow, has done a lot of environmental reporting in areas of the world that maybe don't get as much attention as they should. Remains grew out of one of these projects and seeks to shed light on the plight of a people displaced from their home on the Pacific island of Banaba. And it also turned into an ongoing real-life quest for Janice. I won't spoil it all, but I urge you to subscribe, download, and listen to Remains, which has new episodes on the way. Go to storyhanger.com for more information. This season of Raised Sports is brought to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Memorial Cancer Fund. Dominic Fouts, we called him Nick, was my cousin. He died of colon cancer in 2012 at the age of 34. Shortly after, his sister Suzanne started the foundation in his honor. The mission here is a really important one, and that is to fund programs that provide financial aid to cancer patients and their families. This is a big deal because the costs of cancer treatment are incredibly high. According to a report from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, cancer patients are more than 2.5 times more likely to file for bankruptcy. So support the Dom Fouts Fund and help families deal with the costs of cancer treatment. For more information on how to do so, go to domfoutsfund.org.
He was very competitive. He was very determined, bullheaded. I don't know that that's the right word, but it goes along with the concept of being very determined and very competitive. You know, wouldn't back down from people, would always play hard, you know, was, I think, a good team player.
In April of 2020, my father, Tim Harkins, died of cancer. This story is a tribute. It is a story of determination, grace, and loyalty. A story of humility and strength. This is a story of love wrapped in sports and in family. This is an ode to my father. Episode 1, Determination. In 2015, my father, Tim Harkins, had a battle with bladder cancer. Ultimately, the decision was made to remove his bladder, and for the most part, aside from some changes to his diet and from having to endure the indignity of a urostomy bag, life went on as normal. It wasn't long after that, on a visit to Los Angeles, he went to the park with me and my children. We played wiffle ball, and Dad was out there chasing down fly balls just like the rest of us. In 2017, at a family reunion in Idaho, Dad drove the boat for hours, towing little kids on inner tubes or bigger kids on water skis. He was Dad, tough, strong, fun-loving, nothing stopping him from doing the things he wanted to do. The doctors told Mom and Dad that the key window to watch was 5 years. If he made it through that window without any further issues, they would consider the cancer cured. But in November of 2019, it returned. Mom and Dad kept pretty quiet about it. Information was scarce, especially for me, who I've never really been that great about making regular phone calls home. When information did come out, it was usually cloaked in optimism. If you read between the lines, you could maybe notice something was a little bit different, but knowing Dad, I never really worried. To me, he was strong, he was determined, he was damn near invincible. He beat cancer once, and he would beat it again. As for Mom and Dad, they remained pretty tight-lipped. They didn't want to cause a panic or make a big fuss or anything. They trusted their doctors, and they trusted Dad's strength. They figured, like I did, that Dad would come out on top, just like he always did. That was Dad. When he put his mind to something, he almost always won out. My dad was born in 1947, the second of eight children raised by Joe and Margaret Harkins in Tacoma, Washington. My grandfather served in the Navy in World War II, then became a mailman. His job allowed him to be home for dinner every night and often to coach his kids in sports. Grandma was a homemaker and looked after the kids in their tiny one-bathroom house on North 14th Street, a couple of blocks away from the University of Puget Sound. It was an interesting time growing up in the 50s, a tight-knit Irish Catholic community, large families, lots of kids roaming the neighborhood together, sharing their experiences through St. Patrick's Catholic Church and the accompanying school, and of course, through sports. Dad played on school teams, church teams, and local youth teams, including the Cheney Studs, an organization named after Ben Cheney, a local lumber magnate and youth sports benefactor who made his fortune by patenting what would become the standard 8-foot stud used in construction, hence the name Cheney Studs. Dad's youth was spent in an environment that was both strict and lenient. Strict, thanks to his my way or the highway father, lenient in that he had this immense amount of freedom to roam the neighborhood or even the city with his friends. Just make sure you're home for dinner.
It was a little different era. Kids could sort of run free.
This is Joe Staley, a lifelong friend of my dad's.
We'd take the bus out to Titlow. You know where Titlow Park is? It's out on Puget Sound. It's off of, right by the Narrows Bridge, really. So we would take the bus out, and there was a swimming pool, and we'd go swimming out at Titlow Park. And you know, you're gone all day, and your parents sort of liked that, you know. And then you'd swim for 2 hours, and then it was about another hour and a half bus ride back because you had to take the bus into Tacoma and then transfer downtown, come out. So, you know, I don't know that kids would do stuff like that today because we were, you know, sixth graders, I think.
Dad was expected to earn his own money for anything he wanted to buy, even his clothes. So he had a paper route, he mowed lawns, he did odd jobs, he even worked as a school janitor. This was a way to learn responsibility, but also a way to learn that if you wanted something, and if you worked for it, you could get it. This drive really showed itself when it came to sports. Dad was a good athlete, if not quite an elite one. He was big and strong and fast for his age, at least compared to his peers. Here's childhood friend Bill Leadham.
He was very fast as a runner. I don't know if he didn't run track because he played baseball, but he was a guy that was good at every sport he played, but not great at any one particular sport. So that's why he played football, basketball, and baseball. But I like to think of myself as I'm good at every sport, but not great in any of them. Tim was better than I was at all the ones he played.
Another friend, Dave Hughes, describes his first run-in with my dad on a football field.
My dad and I had a real poor start. I had been playing Little League for like 6 years, and we had never lost a game. And then we had to play the Sixth Avenue Colts. And they had a strong team. It was a championship game at the end of the season. And they had this fast running back that ran sweeps on us. And he was this bow-legged kid. And he ran all over us and ended up beating us 7-6. It's the only time in my Little League career we'd had a loss. So I wasn't sure I liked him at first.
That bow-legged speedster was, of course, my dad. His legs were a long-running joke, and he was in on it. He used to call them his power pistons. In fact, he and my brother Paul, we all ended up around the same height, about 6 feet, but Dad always joked that he was only that short because of his crooked legs. When he was in his late 60s, he had both of his knees replaced, a procedure that somewhat straightened his bow legs, and from that point on, he always claimed that he was now the tallest of us. Dad also had another limitation, poor eyesight. This became a problem in high school at Bellarmine Prep when he was in line to become the starting quarterback, sort of. The coach had a dilemma. Dave Hughes tells the story.
Tim did not have very good eyesight in high school. He always wore glasses, and he didn't like to wear his glasses playing football. So our senior year, he and I shared quarterback duties, and the coach would swap us out every other play. And the coach's quandary was Tim could throw the ball 50 yards, but he could only see 10 yards. I could see 50 yards, but I could only throw it 10 yards. So he never knew which one of us to put in.
Bellarmine itself had a quandary in those days, as a Catholic school playing against Tacoma's big powerhouse public schools. It was tough to compete, especially against Lincoln High School, which was stacked with stars. You might have heard of players like Lawyer Malloy and John Kitna. They were more recent Lincoln High kids who went on to the NFL. But back in the early 60s, they were pretty good too. I remember Dad talking about two players in particular from that era, Brent DeMeeler and Donnie Moore, both great players who went on to play college football at the University of Washington. DeMeeler was a ferocious lineman, and Dad would describe how intimidating it was to hear him just a few feet away breathing as he lined up under center. Dad couldn't hand the ball off fast enough. Moore was a running back, a dominant athlete who at 210 pounds had about 40 pounds on my dad. He also had this amazing combination of speed and strength, good enough to win the 100-yard dash, the 200-yard dash, and the shot put at the state track meet. One article I read described him, with perhaps a bit of hyperbole, as having a skill set somewhere between Emmett Smith and Earl Campbell. And since my dad played both ways, as most kids did in that era, when he was on defense, he played safety, and that meant that he saw a lot of Moore when they played against Lincoln. I remember Dad telling a story of trying to tackle him, of taking the perfect angle, knowing he would either bring Moore down or at least knock him out of bounds. A moment later, he found himself lying in the grass, watching Donnie Moore sprint towards the end zone. He had simply run through him like he wasn't even there.
Tim's team in his senior year of high school was better than many Bellarmine teams, but still was did not win a league championship or anything. But the Donnie Moore year was his junior year, and so they're playing Lincoln, and Lincoln won that game 56-0. I remember out at Lincoln Bowl, and Tim was playing safety. I don't know how many touchdowns Donnie Moore scored, but several, I'm sure. But, I mean, he was typically, you know, through the line and past the linebackers, and there's the safety. You're the last one. So he had his hands full trying to bring Donnie Moore down. I'm sure he did some, but he didn't all the time.
That's my Uncle Vern, who was a year younger than Dad, two grades behind him in school. Vern probably played more sports with Dad than anybody in those years, from Cheney Studs teams to church and school teams to just goofing around in the neighborhood. Vern explains what made Dad a good athlete.
He was very competitive. He was very determined, very, I don't know, I was going to say bullheaded. I don't know that that's the right word, but it goes along with the concept of being very determined and very competitive. You know, wouldn't back down from people, would always play hard, you know, was, I think, a good team player. You know, some people kind of get the egotistical attitude about their athletic abilities, I think, and that certainly was never an issue around him. Just a very, very skilled, very strong, competitive, determined athlete, you know, who wanted to perform at his best. And probably had good respect from the other kids that he would have been playing with.
I want to focus on the bullheaded comment here because it does sort of fit in with Dad's determination. The two words, determination and bullheaded, are sort of like siblings. very much alike, but with some key differences. Bullheadedness is determination taken a bit too far. It implies a sort of irrational stubbornness. And while it wasn't something that showed up often, it was a part of Dad's personality in those years. And there was one moment in particular that speaks to this. It was Dad's junior year at Bellarmine Prep, and he was becoming a pretty good basketball player at this point. Vern recalls that he was the top scorer on the junior varsity team, and there were a couple of times Dad was called up to the varsity, but he didn't get into any games. Then there was one game where Dad was just on fire. He was hitting everything.
But then he had a particular game where he was having an exceptional game in the JV game. And I mean, Tim's story was that he had like 20 points at halftime.
So the varsity coach, a young man at the time named Ron Urquhart, pulls Dad from the JV game at halftime so he can come up and play in the varsity game later that night. And how it worked was you're allowed 4 quarters every game between JV and varsity. So by being removed from the game at halftime, this game where Dad was just lighting it up, he was eligible to play 2 quarters for the varsity. So he gets called up, but Coach Urquhart doesn't put him in again. He doesn't play a single minute, and he was just furious.
He sat there the whole game, didn't get in, and he was just pissed about that. So when the season came to an end, he just said, you know, I'm not playing for this guy. I'm not going to go through this as a senior. And so he just didn't turn out.
Dad was an easygoing guy, fun-loving, likable, the opposite of a worrier. He always believed work hard and things will work out. But this incident bothered him so much that he didn't turn out for the team his senior year. He refused to play for this coach who, at least in his mind, had mistreated him. There was a sense of injustice, and so he took a stand. And this was no small thing, because it caused problems for Dad at home, because the quitting, the stubbornness, the bullheadedness, this upset his dad. And Grandpa was so mad about Dad quitting that he wouldn't let him play on the St. Patrick's rec team. Here's Joe Staley.
We had a church high team, you know, a bunch of us that didn't play high school ball. And Tim's dad wouldn't let him play on our church high basketball team. You know, it's one of those, a little bit of a power struggle. He said, if you're not going to play for Bellarmine, you're not going to play in this recreational league.
Dad would get a chance to make his point, however, during that senior year when a big game was organized between a group of senior intramural players, the senior all-stars, and the seniors from the Bellarmine varsity team. It was organized to raise money for the school. They sold tickets and everything. And my dad, playing for the intramural all-stars, was the leading scorer as they beat the varsity.
I remember he had a particularly good game that night. He was tough, you know. He could go inside, he could rebound, he could score underneath. That's kind of what he did in that game. I think Tim was out to prove something.
So Dad had made his point, but in the long run, he regretted doing that. I remember him telling me he wished he hadn't quit, and I think it was a lesson he learned from and grew from. Vern agrees.
I think he reflected in hindsight over time that, you know, he probably made a stupid decision. He should have just turned out and, you know, just played his hardest and probably, you know, might have been a starter, probably would have played a fair amount. What you have to understand, and you probably experienced yourself as you became a father and you grew older, there's a level of maturity that happens with most people that, you know, it changes somewhat how you conduct yourself, how you live, how you look at things, how you understand things and respond to things. Different than how you were as a teenager, you know, with a temper and an attitude that can cause you to make certain decisions that you think later on, well, that was kind of stupid.
When it came to my dad's life, incidents of bullheadedness were rare. In fact, I can't think of another story where he acted like that without taking a moment to reflect, to consider the consequences, to wonder if maybe there would be another way to make it work. but there are plenty of examples of his determination when figuring out how to get some money to buy some new clothes, when trying to tackle Donnie Moore, when trying to stop one of his kids on the neighborhood basketball court, when trying to beat cancer. He had his ways, and he usually figured out a way to win. The spring of 2020, though, was different. It was Tuesday, March 31st, when Mom and Dad went to the doctor for a report on his latest scan. The doctor had bad news. Chemotherapy wasn't working. The tumor was growing, and they'd have to talk about other options. Later that day, Mom returned from the pharmacy and heard Dad calling for her. He had collapsed on the floor due to severe pain and weakness from his tumor. Mom called 911, and he was rushed to the hospital. He had suffered septic shock brought on by an infection. My siblings rallied, and we all converged on our hometown of Spokane. Katie and Bridget, already living in the Pacific Northwest, were there quickly to be with Mom. Paul packed his family into a rented van and started driving from Connecticut, 3,000 miles away. He arrived on Saturday, just before I did, as I drove 18 hours straight from Los Angeles. Allison flew in from Phoenix the next day. The COVID-19 pandemic complicated things, and we weren't allowed to go to the hospital to see Dad. But we had regular video calls with him, and he slowly seemed to improve. He was taken off the respirator. They gave him back his glasses. He looked happy to see us on the other side of the video screen. Then, Dad's COVID-19 test came back negative, and they moved him from the COVID wing of the ICU to the regular ICU. This gave us hope. Dad's determination would win out again. Then, communication from the hospital almost vanished. That was a frustrating day, not knowing what was going on. We grew anxious. We continued to reach out to the hospital, but when we did get communication back, it included messages that were kind of cryptic and said things like, we should be ready to have the conversation. We knew what that meant for a regular person, but this was Dad, and he had been looking better. It didn't make any sense. Finally, they invited us to the hospital for a meeting. I went in with Mom, and we went in wearing masks and gloves, while a couple of cars packed with family members waited in the parking lot. They brought us into the chapel off the main lobby. Dad's doctor was there, as was his nurse and the chaplain. They explained that the infection was under control thanks to heavy doses of antibiotics, but they couldn't get rid of it completely because it was being fed by dead cancer cells. And they couldn't treat the cancer either because the infection made Dad too weak. It was a terrible 1-2 punch. Now we understood. It wouldn't matter how determined Dad was this time. This was a battle he wasn't going to win. The one blessing in all of this was that Dad didn't have COVID-19. That meant he wouldn't have to be alone in his final days. So we made preparations to bring him home. This episode was written and produced by me, Bob Harkins. Special thanks to Vern Harkins, Joe Staley, Dave Hughes, and Bill Leadham for taking part in this episode. And also to my mom, Patty Harkins, for helping me so much to fill in some of the details. The theme song for this season comes from Corbin Kites. Other music in this episode by Vans in Japan, Steve Adams, and Dan Leibowitz. This season of Raised Sports comes to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Cancer Fund. For more information, go to domfoutsfund.org. Raised Sports is a proud member of the Story Hanger Podcast Network.